All right, we are starting a brand new series today, but we're kind of part of a meta-series where we have been August, September, and now as we begin October. Let me tell you a little bit about myself. When I was in second grade, don't know what age that is. Bridget, how old? About 7 years old? Okay. When I was about 7 years old, I really loved the ladies. I can actually go back. I have a distinct memory going all the way back to 4 years old where I discovered I really loved the ladies. 4 years old. And here's what I really, once school started and kindergarten, we had this special time called nap time, where you got to bring your little mats and pallets, whatever you had, whatever you brought, and you got to take a nap. And I always wanted to take a nap right beside a couple special ladies. Kindergarten. And then in the first grade, well, that didn't change. We got nap time there too. I had a goal of, I wanted to hold her hand during nap time. That was my goal. Can't remember if I achieved that or not. I have no idea. I can't remember, but I do distinctly know that was my goal. Second grade, no different. Second grade, I think we took naps in Fayetteville. I went to elementary school in Fayetteville all the way through the third grade, I think. Wow, we were some napping kids. Let's see. Oh, here was the problem, though. By the time the second grade rolled around, about 7 years old, there was a certain something that as a boy, you did not want your name associated with this. I can't speak for the ladies, but I know for us boys and at 7 years old, this was not good. You probably have heard this. I'm not sure if our kiddos have, though, our teenagers, I don't know. But parents, you've heard of it. So if you know this, you can fill in the blanks with your own names. But if you've heard of it, then join with me. Harley and Vanessa sitting in a tree. K-I-S-S-I-N-G. First comes love, then comes marriage, then comes baby in a baby carriage. Now, I don't know if there were some differences in regions or not, but that's the way we said it. And we absolutely did not want, as a boy, our name associated with that poem. We didn't want it. But here's the funny thought to me as I was thinking through this. That poem is pretty close, fairly close, to God's plan for family. Strangely, we have a man, we have a woman, we have a marriage. Eventually, there's a family there, right? It's kind of interesting how that poem kind of works. But it also reminds me that this is also God's plan for His family. Okay, God's family. So we began this meta-series, the story of God and the story of us. And here's how we began. So here's God's plan for family. It began first when we said that God chose a bride. We talked about this in the month of August, that God chose a bride. And then last month in September, we talked about how God then builds His house. So we have a marriage, a bride there, we got a house. And so we talked about that in September. So what comes next? Well, October, obviously. And we can say this, oh, baby.
Oh,
I like this version of our Roland for this meta-series. Those little baby lips, those little baby mouths, the little baby hands. I just love it. And the little baby feet. So adorable. But here we go. If God has a family, then I want in. I want in on that family. Do you? I want in. Because to be a part of his family, if we're not, then that means, man, we're going to miss out on something. And we're going to miss out on that something eternally. Where the Bible describes that we would be forever, eternally separated from God in a real place that's designed for the creator of evil, a place designed to be the home, eternal, eventual home of the evil one, which for me makes it pretty simple for me. I want to be in God's family. That's where I want to be. And so I have to think to myself, okay, oh baby, how do we get there? How do we get into God's family? And so this great big story we've been talking about can become our story. And this great big story all began, we have said this over and over again, it began before time began, before the beginning as we understand it. So it all began, this story began before creation. This plot that God developed in the mind and heart of God, it happened before creation. Every bit of it was already planned from the beginning, before the beginning, already in the mind of God. So before God created planets, before God created insects, before God created absolutely anything upon this earth, before there was any atmosphere, any plants, any animals, and yes, obviously then, before he created you and I, his prized creation, God had decided before then, he wanted a family. Now, this is important. He didn't need a family because God doesn't need anything. He didn't need a family. God is complete as God is. He wasn't lacking anything. He was completely satisfied, wanted a family. And here's kind of how that works. God so loved. That's where it came from, right? And from that love, he wanted to lavish that love upon a family. So God went about creating his plan and then creating his family. And he did it in the most interesting way. So to help us kind of understand how God did this, we're going to be looking at the book of Hebrews. Now, we are not sure who wrote the book of Hebrews. We're not sure, but we do know that it was written to Hebrew people, to Jews, and they were needing some encouragement. Now, today, most of us are Gentiles, probably, very possibly all of us, but certainly most of us are Gentiles, which means we are not Jews, but we're going to be encouraged by this writing as well. This letter also involves us, even though we're Gentiles. Now, we're told a great deal about how God can take us and land us, place us right in the middle of his great big story, to the point that his story becomes part of our story. So hang on this morning. We're going to work our way through several verses in this book. We're going to be starting in Hebrews chapter 2 with verse 10, and here's what the writer says. God, for whom and through whom everything was made, chose to bring many children into glory. Now, let's kind of catch ourselves up. So God is the creator. He created all. And God wanted, the writer of Hebrews, he wanted children who would be with him eternally. Now, God, because he knows everything, knowing that his children would blow it, which means they would sin. He knew that ahead of time. So God knew before he created us that he was going to have to do something. The only way that we could become a part of his family forever. So the writer goes on. And it was only right that he should make Jesus, not make as in create, but make as in I'm going to appoint that he should make Jesus, through his suffering, a perfect leader fit to bring them into their salvation. So if Jesus did not do this, if God did not do this, then we would never be able to be in his family. We could not ever be in his presence because God is perfectly holy and he cannot allow imperfection and unholiness, degradation into his presence. So it required something. The writer goes on. We're now in verse 11. So now Jesus and the ones he makes holy, they have the same Father. All right, now get this. That is why Jesus is not ashamed to call them his brothers and sisters. And to that, we can say, ta-da! Welcome to the family. So we go from a child, which is Jesus, the Son of God, from a child to many children, and suddenly it seems like a family is born. So we have God the Father, we have God the Son, and then we're not leaving out God the Spirit. Through the Spirit, through the leading of God the Spirit, Jesus now has brothers and sisters all sharing the same Father. Now, the writer is going to go ahead now and give us this great plan that God has, and he gives us some of the why behind this family plan, okay? Gives us some of the why. He tells us some whys regarding Jesus. So let's look at verse 14. Because God's children are human beings. So let's pause here for a moment. On Wednesdays, Bryce is leading us through a discussion in our small group about some things we cannot see. Among those are angels, right? That we sometimes can't see. We can put it that way. But clearly, right here, I want you to understand when the writer of Hebrews is saying that because God's children are human beings, I want to be very clear, God's children, these human beings, are not angels. They're not angels. We're not even really like the angels. And contrary to popular movie belief, no human has ever become an angel, and they never will. They're very separate beings. There is no human that ever died and got their wings. It doesn't happen. That's not how it works. They don't die and get wings and become guardian angels watching over people. That's, again, not how it works. We, as humans, will never be angels. Angels are not flesh and blood like we are. Angels are created, and they are living, but they are not human. We, the writer of Hebrews is being very clear, we are human. Because God's children are human beings, he goes on, made of flesh and blood. Then he says, the Son, he's not done here, but by the Son, he's meaning Jesus, who we also call the Son of God. And we understand in the gospel and this that Jesus is God himself. We talk about that a lot. So, and the Son. Now, Jesus, by just information, is that voice that's speaking at the creation of the world. Everything comes into existence through that voice, approved by the Father through the voice of Jesus. And so according to God's plan before creation, the Son, Jesus, the writer goes on, also became flesh and blood. Now our question would naturally be, okay, I hear what you're saying, Harley, but why? Why did God have to become flesh and blood? Why did God have to become a human? I mean, that sounds like quite a step down from God and his existence as the Son of God to becoming a human. That sounds like a great step down. And you're right. It is. But here's why. The writer of Hebrews tells us in the very next part. He says, for only as a human being could he die. He being God. That's the only way he could die. Because God can't die. And then we have to ask the question, well, why in the world would God need to die? And we discover that God doesn't need to die. He is perfect, and he's perfectly connected. God chose to die because of love. That's why. He wants children with him forever. But because they chose back in the garden, those many, many years ago, they chose themselves over God. They chose their way over his way. Their sin brought with it a victory for the evil one. And part of that victory was death. So death in a sinful state, death with a rap sheet like each of us have, a rap sheet that says, I've done this, I've done this, I've done this, I've done this. I've chosen my way over God's way, this way, this way, this way. Here are all the ways I've been selfish. Here are all the ways I've been greedy. Here's all the way I've hated others. Here's all the way I've chosen myself over everything else and over God. All of that is called sin. And if I die with all of that, well, there's a problem. Because in that simple state, that means I will have an eternal separation from a perfectly holy God. Because he can't have that rap sheet. Or I can't have that rap sheet and be in his presence. So that would leave God with no family. But here's the problem. God chose for himself and said, I'm going to have a family. So that's why God already developed a plan for his family. A plan to defeat this list of mine and yours. A plan to defeat that sin and death and that we continue. You see, Adam and Eve failed to choose God's way. They failed. They failed, and I have continued to fail in that very same way. So have you. They failed to live holy as God is holy. And so God came to do that for them. He came to do that for you, and he came to do that for me. And so if God is going to do that for us, in order for him to do that for us, God had to do that as one of us, a human. So enter Jesus. Enter Jesus. Completely human and at the same time, absolutely, completely God. And he did that so that Jesus could live like God on this earth, and choose things the way God would choose things, say things the way God would say things, do things the way God would do things, love other people the way God loves other people. He did all of that here so that he could live perfectly on our behalf. And you know what else he did? He responded to temptation the way God would respond or have in the flesh here, living perfectly, perfectly holy. But listen, living perfectly holy was not enough. It wasn't enough. And God already knew that. It was part of the plan. You see, there was a curse on all of humanity that is still around us today. And that curse, because of sin, part of that curse is death. You see, living, Jesus living here was not enough. God had to defeat death for all of humans. And to defeat death, God himself had to die. So God became a man. Still fully God, but also fully human. And here's what the writer of Hebrews continues to say now. For only as a human being could he die, and only by dying could he break the power of the devil who had. This is not mentioned right here. It's mentioned later in this book of Hebrews, but I want to mention it right here because it's important. The power of the devil and the power of death was broken at the resurrection. That's when it was broken. The author of Hebrews talks about that later. Jesus, God, died. 3 days later, Jesus, God, walked out of the tomb alive. His heart was beating again, his physical heart, the physical heart of Jesus beating again. Blood pumping through every cell of his body again. Those cells were dead in the tomb, but God gave them life. And I want you to know this. The devil, the evil one, never saw that coming. Bryce, I'm talking about this the other day, how just imagining, I think it was Wednesday night before we got started, imagining how the evil one must have thought with Jesus hanging on the cross, how victorious he was. He never saw the resurrection coming. And then if you were born in the 80s, we knew that because Carmen sang about it, so... You could go look that up. So the evil one never saw that coming. It is the resurrection of Jesus planned before time, and it was kept secret by God so that at just the right time, according to God's timing, everything changed. So we ask the question again, why? And he answers it in verse 15. Only in this way could he set free all who have lived their lives as slaves to the fear of dying. Who has lived their life as a slave under that fear of dying, under that curse of sin and death? And the answer is every single human who has ever walked this planet. After Adam and Eve, which they were the first, so that means every one of us. Who has then, according to the writer of Hebrews, the opportunity to be set free? Who has that opportunity? And the answer would be anyone and everyone who has lived under that curse of sin and death. Everyone, every human since Adam and Eve. All can. But only those who become part of his family, who become his children, only those will be set free. You see, all humans are creations of God, but not all humans become children of God. We have to remember that the writer of the book of Hebrews is speaking primarily to Jewish people. And so the information and kind of the way he describes and the way he creates this flow of this book, we have to remember it's information that was really targeted to them, but the information also applies to us Gentiles. And the writer is going to use some language and some words that is directed specifically to Jewish people. And they're going to understand in a way that we don't have the context to understand. He's going to speak their cultural language. I want to give you this example. In chapter 2, now verse 16. He says, we also know that the Son did not come to help angels. He came to help the descendants of Abraham. Now, those descendants of Abraham are Jewish people. And so the writer writing to Jews says, he came to help you. He, Jesus, came to help you. The writer is Jewish, more than likely, and he's saying he came to help us, Jews. But this is important for us. That's not saying that he didn't come to help us as Gentiles. He did. He's not excluding us. He's just using some language that is specifically addressing some Jewish people. He's addressing them, so he calls them out specifically. He's saying, don't fear. He came to help you, and we can include ourselves in that. Don't fear. We are included in that as well. Just know he's singling them out. And now with this beautiful picture of language that we Gentiles, it just doesn't come to us because this is not our language and it's not our culture. And we certainly weren't living in this first century. So what we're getting ready to talk about, these people in the first century, they would pick this up immediately as a Jewish person. So I want to point this out to you because it means something very specific to us today. So he's going to use some words to create what we call a word picture. All right? Sometimes we could use the idea of like a metaphor, right? Where we use words to create pictures and ideas. Well, their language did it. He's writing this in Greek. He's not writing this in Hebrew because they were, in the first century, Greek was their language. And so it's very, very beautiful in the way that it creates these metaphors. And here's what the writer is going to picture. I'm going to describe it for you. It's a very specific word. And the Hebrew readers would pick this up immediately. We do not. But here's the word translated into English. This is the word. It's the word help. Okay? The word help. Verse 16. We also know that the Son did not come to help, there's that word, angels. He came to help the descendants of Abraham. Now, what did God the Son give us? He answers that in the next verse, verse 17. We're going to come back to this word help. Hang on. Therefore, it was necessary for him, Jesus, to be made in every respect like us, his brothers and sisters, so that he could be our merciful and faithful high priest before God. I wish we had time to talk about that picture. We don't. Then, the writer goes on, then he could offer a sacrifice that would take away the sins of the people. So that's the help that Jesus came to give the Jews, and he came to give us as well. That's the help. The help is God had to die. That's the help. He had to die as a sacrifice. He had to offer himself as a sacrifice, and that sacrifice would take away the sins of the people. That's the help. That sacrifice was for Jews. That sacrifice was for us Gentiles. And those who will, as you heard Cole describe in talking about the baptisms, those who will cling to Jesus and his finished work upon the cross, understanding and trusting in that resurrection, they all become brothers and sisters of the Son of God. They become children in the family of God. Now let's go back to that word help. Okay, we're going to talk about that. It's the very same word that's used in chapter 8, verse 8 and verse 9. We've been reading from chapter 2, but we're going to jump ahead. So this is the same word that the writer of Hebrews is using. Let's look at it. Chapter 8. The writer says, look, the days are coming, says the Lord, when I will make a new covenant with the house of Israel and with the house of Judah, not like the covenant I made with their ancestors on the day I took them by their hands. That phrase, I think I've got it highlighted right here. That phrase is the word help. Same word. We translated it. I wasn't there. The translators used the English word help earlier. Here, It's translated as the day I took them by their hands. It's the same word. And so remember what he said. He said, Jesus came to help you. This was in verse chapter 2. He came to help you, Jews. He came to help you. He came to take you by your hand. Let's keep reading. So the literal translation, take them by your hand. You could also say the literal translation is to take hold of them. He said to take them by their hands, to lead them out of the land of Egypt. Now, here's the picture. The writer of Hebrews is making sure they get of a family, and they were picking this up. This picture of a family, this word picture of a family. And the picture is this. When we add this together, the picture is this. God taking the children of Abraham, literally leading them out of Egypt. Taking them by the hand like a loving parent, a loving adoptive parent even. Taking them by the hand and walking them to safety. As if walking them across the interstate. Right? As if walking them through the Red Sea, walking them through the desert, right? Walking them out of slavery, out of Egypt to safety. Taking them by the hand. Have you ever seen, when I was a teenager, I remember looking at preschools and they would have the children lined up and they would all have a little place where they were holding on the rope. Have you ever seen that? And there would be usually a leader in the front and an adult leader in the back, maybe one in the middle, I don't know. But can you imagine God the Father and God the Son, God the Spirit leading them like little children, hanging, leading them to safety, taking them. But this is even a better picture, not placing them on the rope, but taking them by the hand and walking them to safety, leading them out of bondage, leading them to freedom. And that is the same word from the passage that we just read this morning in chapter 2, where it said, He, Jesus, came to him. It's the same. Jesus came to help the descendants of Abraham. It's the same word. It's the same picture. And the writer of Hebrews is making sure they understand this. So the literal translation of that very well could be, He, Jesus, God, came to take hold of them by their hands, the descendants of Abraham, like little children, like toddlers. Why? To take the Jews and us, the Gentiles, by the hand and to lead us out of the land of our sin and out of the land of our bondage and out of the land that we all know too well of death and into the family of God. And that's why God became Jesus. And that's why God put on the flesh and the blood so that He could die for your sins and my sins, so that He could pay for our sin, all the sin, and so that He could defeat death by walking out of the tomb alive, so He could then take you and take me by the hand, if you will follow. If you will choose to submit your life, to reach out and grab His hand and submit your life to His care and to His control. And as He, to rely upon Him and Him alone and take Him by the hand. And as He, Jesus, takes you by the hand, your loving according to the writer of Hebrews, your loving big brother who takes you by the hand. Your loving big brother sent by the Father. And you know, just a heads up, the only way you can find His hand to grab hold of it is through God, the Spirit. And you take His hand, your big brother's hand, sent to you by the loving Father, pointed out by God the Spirit, because He wants to lead you out of slavery and into the family of God. Oh, baby, Jesus wants to lead you home. That is His desire for you. And my question is this simply, will you, if you have not yet, will you take His hand? And I want you to know, that is why we do what we do as this church, because He, Jesus, God, and God's Spirit did that. And then Jesus commanded us to go and tell the world. Tell the world, the whole world, everyone we cross about what He did. So I guess my question, really, really the question that matters, we just talked about why. The real question is, will you take Him by the hand? Will you take Him by the hand? Will you follow Him? Will you say yes to Him? Will you submit to Him? Submit to His care and His control. And in that, as we take His hand, He will then guide us and lead us. Will you allow Jesus to be your loving big brother? To guide you from underneath that curse that we have all grown up under and lived under, that only curse we know, and that curse is sin and death. Will you allow Him to? And here's how that happens very clearly. We just simply surrender, we submit, and we follow. We surrender. We say, I have made the decisions my way. I've been living life my way. I've been making the decisions for my life. I have been determining the things for my life. And I surrender to You because, Jesus, You died on the cross for me. You walked out of the tomb alive for me so that You could bring me into Your family. And I surrender this life to You. I submit. I submit my life to Your care and Your control. I was in control, but no longer. I say now, God, Jesus, You are in control of my life. I submit my life to Your care. I have been trying to meet my needs in this life my way. I have been trying to get my life organized my way, but I'm going to submit it to Your care and allow You to take care of that. And then I simply follow Him. Jesus, before You tell me something, I want You to know this in advance. My answer to You is yes. Now, what was it You were going to ask of me? The answer is yes. We surrender, we submit, and we follow. And my hope is this, that if you have not yet done that, you will do that right now. Because, oh baby, God wants you in His family. And if you feel His Spirit tugging on your heart right now, tugging on your life, tugging on your choices, tugging on any aspect of who you are as His creation, if you feel His Spirit drawing you in, then that's the time to answer and say, I submit, I surrender, I will follow You. The truth is, that's really the only time we can submit to Him. The evil one, I believe, wants us to believe that, oh, we can do that later. We can take care of that on our own time. We can do that. I've got things I want to accomplish. I've got things I want to do in this life. I will, Jesus, I promise, I will do it later. But But the problem is, the more we say and put off the call of God on our lives, then the less we hear it until eventually we hear it no more. And if you hear Him tugging on your life, now is the time for you to say, I surrender to You, Jesus. I submit to You, Jesus. I'm going to follow You. And I hope He's calling, tugging on your life right now.